We're holding on Sanhedrin, the last words on page Lamed Tes, middle of Os Tzadik Aleph. We're in the middle of talking about the trial when Yoav, David's general, was on trial. First, the charges were, we talked about yesterday, first that he had killed Avner, Shaul's general, many years earlier. We were in the middle of talking about where he had killed Amasa, who was another nephew of David, a cousin of Yoav. He had been Avshalom's general, and now after that, he was supposed to become David's new general. But then we said he was supposed to gather together the soldiers to put down a rebellion. He was late getting there, so David sent Yoav, and Yoav on the way met up with Amasa and killed him. So we said that Yoav was claiming that Amasa was a Moed B'Malchus because David had given him instructions to be back here in 3 days, and he wasn't. But as we learned yesterday, they told him that actually Amasa did the right thing, because when he went to rally the troops, he found that they were in the middle of learning Torah, and he wasn't going to interrupt them in the middle of, and that's the correct thing, because the instructions from a king don't override the importance of learning Torah. So they continue, Ella, so however they tell him, so now you're claiming that Amasa was a Moed B'Malchus. In fact, it's the other way around now. Who gavra Moed B'Malchus hava? This person, meaning you, Yoav, are actually guilty of being Moed B'Malchus. So it can mean, Marsha says, that they're not saying that, so in other words, they might be saying two things. You're chayev on two charges. You're chayev for killing Amasa, and therefore now, if it were only that, then he would be Haruge Bastian, and as we learned before, according to everybody agrees, Nifsei and Lamelech, that the property of somebody executed by Bastian goes to his heirs. However, they're telling him also that you're a Moed B'Malchus, and therefore, we had a machlokas whether that means that his property is going to go to the king or not. So either they're telling him, you're also a Moed B'Malchus, which means that after all, your property is going to be forfeit to the government, despite what you were trying. You wanted to be judged by the Sanhedrin. In order to avoid that, they're telling him, after all, it's not going to work. The fact is, even if we say that, fine, as far as Avner, we said we're going to maybe let that go. Even as far as Amasa, maybe we can let that go, maybe not. But the fact is, regardless, you're still a Moed B'Malchus. So as we find the pasuk, first of all, Marsha points out that actually we know, as we're going to see now, that Yoav supported Adoni Yahu in trying to become the king. But that's when David gives the instructions to Shlomo before he passes away and tells Shlomo you have to deal with the matter of Yoav and you have to have him killed. And he says v'gamach yodaita asher also the Yoav ben Tsruya, you know what Yoav ben Tsruya did to me. That means primarily the fact that the last thing that he did, which was supporting Adoni Yahu, which makes him a Moed B'Malchus against, because he knew that David's instructions were that Shlomo is going to be the next king. Ion Yaakov points out as well, we're going to talk about soon in the Gemara, that there was another thing many years earlier in the whole matter involving Uriah, where Yoav blabbed a secret from David in that connection, and therefore and David held that against him as well. So now they tell Yoav at the end of his life that you are in fact a Moed B'Malchus. Dichtiv, as the pasuk says, Vashmua bar ad Yoav, the news that Shlomo had been anointed and crowned as king, came to Yoav, and therefore, as Rashi says, he has what to be afraid of. He knows that he's in trouble. Ki Yoav not to achre Adoniah, because Yoav had followed Adoniah, he had supported Adoniah in trying to become king, which makes him a Moed B'Malchus. But Achrei Avshalom lo nota, but he had not supported Avshalom. Now why do we need to mention that point? If he didn't support Avshalom, then obviously he has nothing to be afraid of as far as that. So why even bother mentioning that point? So Omar Behoda Shabikish Lintas Flainata means even at the revolt of Avshalom a few years earlier, he had thought of supporting Avshalom, but in the end he didn't. In the end he stayed loyal to David, but already then he was thinking of supporting Avshalom. Now obviously that doesn't mean that's not a reason for him to get in trouble. The fact is, you know, we don't say Machshava Ra, we don't count to that, but the point is the Pasuk does want us to realize that even already when it came to the revolt of Avshalom, he was already thinking of switching sides. Well, my time alone not just, so why in fact did he not actually go and incline and follow Avshalom? Amar Rabbi Elazar. So Rabbi Elazar says, Adayim l'chluchis shel David kayemes. Because the freshness, the moisture, meaning the strength of David was still present. When Absalom revolted, it was about, you know, it was David's 35th, the 36th year or so as king. So David was already fairly old. He was already in his 60s at that time, but nevertheless, he was still strong and vigorous. You can see it in the psukim over there, in the whole description of Absalom's revolt and how David and what David did during it. So therefore, Yo-Yo figured David is still strong and healthy, and therefore I'm afraid to start up with him. But now, when it came to Adoniyahu, where you already have in the psukim before that, Melech David Zokin, that David was old and he couldn't even retain his body heat, and he needed Avishag Hashanamis to warm him up, as we learned earlier in the Masechta. So then Yo-Yo figured, in that case, then now I have nothing to worry about from David's reprisals, and therefore he went and followed Adoniyahu. Another explanation, the Yad Ramah gives another point of L'chluchis shel David, is that he also had in mind all the favors that David had done for him over the years. He had been David's general, and he had accomplished a tremendous amount for David's kingship, but in return, David had done him many, many favors throughout the year. So he still kept that in mind, and therefore, in the matter of Absalom, he didn't want to start up with David. Whereas when it came to the matter of Adoniyahu, already he was figuring that maybe not so. Yad Ramah doesn't specify why. Maybe it has to do with the fact that David wanted to dismiss him as general after the whole revolt of Absalom. He wanted to dismiss him and appoint Amasa instead. In the end, Amasa was killed and he had no choice but to keep Yoav. But maybe at that point, Yoav started thinking, maybe I don't owe David so many favors anymore. So that would be a reason. Ben Yoyada points out, you know, you have an interesting nuance in the pasuk. Look at the wording of the pasuk. Ki Yoav nota achrei Adonia v'achrei Absalom lo nota. Now, if it meant just that he followed one but he didn't follow the other, then you would have ki not Yoav not to achre Adonia, v'loy not to achre Absalom, or something to that effect. Instead, the way the pasuk phrases it, you can also reread it not to achre Adonia, v'achre Absalom. That he did follow Adonia, and he also followed and inclined himself to Absalom, which is how the Gemara gets this drasha, that even though in practice he didn't, loy nata, in fact he didn't actually follow Absalom, nevertheless he was strongly thinking of it, so therefore the pasuk puts it in that way. We have, sometimes the Gemara will give drashas like that, where it mentioned that the pasuk will give us, for example, a verb, and then it'll give us two things, two nouns, two shame etzems after that, and then another verb, and sometimes the Gemara will darsh in that way, that it means that the verb actually refers to both things that are following it in the pasuk, even though on the face of it, one belongs to one and the other belongs to the other. So the same way over here, we can darsh in not to achre Adonia, but achre Absalom. But nevertheless, loy not to, in practice, he didn't. Okay, so that's one reason, is because l'chluchus shel David kayemes, because David's freshness or the favors that he had done for him were still very much in Yoav's mind, and therefore he was afraid to support Absalom. Reb Yossi Reb Chanina says a different reason why Yoav didn't want to follow Absalom. Adain itztagnini shel David kayemes. The reason is because the itztagnini of David was still intact. Itztagnini literally means stargazers. Here it means the powerful people who would lead David's army, who would go in the vanguard of David's army, they were still present at that time, and therefore Yoav is afraid to start up with David because he knows that they are leading David's army and he's going to have to go up against them. So even though he himself was a tough general, but nevertheless he realized that why are we calling them a stagninim? Rashi says, because the idea is, the same way as you hear what a stargazer says, like you know it's something, and maybe not nowadays, but back then they considered such things fairly reliable. The stargazers actually knew what they were talking about. We have many examples of it in the Gemara. The same way, these guys, David could follow them and follow their advice as far as how to fight the war and how to terrify the enemy. Who are these Tagninishal David? The Amr of Yehuda Amarab, Tof Yeladim Hoyolo the David. There were 400 young men of David. Now, Hoyolo the David makes it sound like they were David's children. It doesn't necessarily mean that they were his children. It means that they were members of his army. Kulan bnei Yifas Toya hoyu. All of them were children of Yifas Toya. So at various times during all the wars in all the years of David's reign, at various times David himself and his soldiers had captured women Yifas Toya and had children with them. So now altogether you have 400 of them. Umagadle blurtis hoyu. They used to wear their hair long in the Goyish style. Now earlier in the Masechta, when we learned about the whole story of Amnon and Tamar. So Tamar is an example of that also. She was conceived while her mother was still a goita. That's an achlokas of Ashi and Tosfos, and whether the Jewish soldier is allowed to have relations with her one time before she's nisgayer. Rashi holds, I don't remember if it's Rashi or Tosfos, but Amnon definitely holds that he can. And in that case, then the child of that would actually be, I think Rashi and the Rambam hold that he can, and Tosfos holds that he can't. In any case, if you say that he can, then it means that the children are going to be conceived when their mother is still a goita. And therefore, so now they continued to behave like goyim in the sense that they would wear their hair long in the goyish style. But that way, the idea is also this way the goyim will be terrified of them. They will, every time that they see these guys in battle, it's going to remind them, you know what? Previous times, we or other nations fought against the Jews and ended up the worst for it, and their women ended up getting captured. So it was a psychological warfare against them to see these guys at the head of the army. So they would go at the head of the troops of David. They are the tough guys. They're the tough leaders of David's army. So they're the vanguard of the army. So now, in other words, according to this explanation, at that time of Absalom's rebellion, they were still around, and therefore Yoav was afraid to try to start up with David and fight against him and fight on Absalom's side. But by the time it came to Adoniyahu, apparently they had already, whatever had happened to them happened, they weren't there, and therefore Yoav has nothing to be concerned about then. We're saying over here, by the way, that tough Yeladim, 400 children. The Gemara mentions this in a couple of places. It's earlier in the Masechta as well. There's an interesting idea. Rabbi Reuven Margolius says in a sefer on this Masechta, Margolius Hayam, he says that we find in Psukim, in Shmuel, and in Divrei Yomim, where it mentions children of David. Now you have it mentions in a couple of places the children who were born before, while he was still king in Hebron, when he's king only over Shevet Yehuda. Later on, it mentions 9 more children who were born to him in Yerushalayim. One of them is Shlomo, and then you have a bunch of others as well. So he says an interesting idea. Maybe over here, when it says tough, maybe it doesn't mean 400, and then we would have to say they're not all from David. It would mean from David and his various soldiers, whoever had captured Yifastoya and father a son with her. But rather, it would mean, actually, the word tough would actually be, it was supposed to be test. It was supposed to be Tisha, as in 9, and somebody abbreviated Tisha to tough, and then they thought it meant 400. And in that case, it would refer to those 9 children who are mentioned in Shmuel and Divrei Yomim. They would be the children we're talking about over here that were born from a Yifas Toya to David, and they were the vanguard of his army, etc.
So
the 9 that are mentioned over there would all be, we would say then that they're all from your first Torah. The Pasuk mentions 4 children from Bathsheba, one of whom is Shlomo, but then it mentions 9 others where it doesn't say who their mother was. So Rabbi Reuven Margolius points out that they may have been the ones that we're talking about over here.
After the children are born from who raises them until they're ready to fight?
Who raises them? I don't know. Maybe their mothers raised them. I mean, they were raised in the palace. I'm sure they had some degree of Yiddishkeit. They didn't grow up as complete goyim, but at least they would wear a blurtis over here. Now, you know, one thing is, I mean, normally, of course, you're not allowed to wear a blurtis or goyish hairstyle about chukas goyim. There are certain cases, the Gemara mentions here and there, and we learned in Baba Kama, for example, where the Chachamim did give special permission to somebody to wear a goyish style of hair because of atzolus nefashis. He has to sit among the goyim, pretend to be one of them, be able to work from the inside to be mevatel gzeiros, and therefore that's a valid reason to override chukas agoy. Maybe in the same way over here, the Sanhedrin of David's time said that we should allow these boys to continue wearing the hairstyles that their mothers of the nations their mothers came from, precisely that, so they can help do the psychological warfare against the goyim, and that after all will save lives, because then it means that fewer people are likely to be killed in battle if the enemies are terrified. So the Gemara continues. This that we're saying that Yoav was a murdered by Malchus, and that he and that he that he even thought of supporting Avshalom. All of this disagrees with what Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana says. The Amr of Abba Bar Kahana, Il Molid David Le Osak or Osa Yoav Vamochama. If it hadn't been for David learning Torah, Yoav would not have been able to fight battles. So in other words, so specifically, what we're saying is this business about the tough Yoladim and all that they were the ones who would terrify the enemy. Now we're saying that Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana learns differently. The real one who was bringing victory over the enemy is David with his learning Torah and Yoav with his fighting the wars, leading the wars. So they were interdependent, and that's really what won the wars. V'ilmola Yoav le'osak David b'Torah, and if it weren't for Yoav fighting the wars, and therefore David has the peace to be able to learn Torah, then David wouldn't have been able to learn Torah. The pasuk says, "Vayhi David osa mishpat tzedakah l'chol amo." David was doing justice and tzedakah for his whole people. Earlier in the Masechta, in the first parak, we talked about that it means that David would judge the people, and if somebody was found guilty and has to pay and can't afford it, then David would pay him out of his own pocket. So there was mishpat and there was tzedakah. We talked about it. Also includes that sometimes there's to make a pshara, etc. Anyway, so David was doing that. The samech lay, and the pasuk continues, "The Yoav ben Tsruya alat tzava," that Yoav ben Tsruya was in charge of the army. So we see, in other words, those two things were interdependent. What made it that David is able to do mishpat tzedakah is the fact that the Yoav al tzava. Therefore, David can depend on Yoav to fight the wars, and he has the menuchas and nefesh to be able to learn Torah. And vice versa, David's schus of learning Torah is what makes him, and doing mishpat tzedakah is what enables Yoav to win the wars. Now, Maharsha points out that we're saying over here David learning Torah, whereas the pasuk mentions mishpat tzedakah. But Maharsha points out, after all, the pasuk says l'chol amoi. So therefore, it means he had to know the dinim thoroughly. Otherwise, it can't be mishpat tzedek for everybody, because inevitably you're going to get something wrong and it's going to be unfair to somebody. So David was osik batorah and knew all the dinim inside out. So now he's able to do true mishpat tzedek and never get anything wrong in his psukim. So now, but if it hadn't been, if Yoav hadn't been fighting the wars, then David would have been troubled by the various goyish nations around, and therefore he wouldn't be able to do that. He wouldn't be able to fartifsich and Torah to know the halacha so carefully to be able to judge everybody properly. So David and Yoav, in that sense, are very interdependent. So that's the thing. My time at David Oisa Mishpat Tzedakah L'chol Amoi. Why is it that David is able to do Mishpat Tzedakah for the whole people? Mishumdi Yoav Al Tzava, because Yoav is in charge of the army and is fighting the wars, and therefore David doesn't have to concern himself with that. My time at Yoav al Tzava, and why is Yoav over the army and successful in the battles? Mishum, the David Oisa Mishpat Tzedakah L'chol Amoi, because David is doing Mishpat Tzedakah. So it's almost like, you know, when you have in Pirkei Avos, for example, Imen Kemach and Torah, Imen Torah and Kemach, and the various other things, each one is interdependent on the other, and you can't have one without the other. There's a sicha in Chelek Dalad where the Rebbe talks about when it comes to there's one in Chelek Dalad, there's another related one in Chelek Tes. The Mishnah tells us in Masechta Tainis that on the 20th of Av, Chof Av, was one of the days when they would bring, when a certain family would bring wood for the Beis Mikdash, the Korban HaEitzim. And the Gemara mentions that there's a machloikas between Reb Meir and Reb Yossi, where the family was called the family of Odin Ben Yehuda, and the question is where, so you have machlokas whether they were descended from David or from Yoav. So the Rebbe talks about in the Sikha, obviously, you know, with a simple answer would be that they're descended from both over the years, descendants of David and descendants of Yoav intermarried, and you have a family that's descended from both of them. But the key thing would be, in other words, so the two different opinions are saying which one is the more important one, and that relates to our Gemara over here, where David and Yoav's contributions are dependent on one another, and David is working on learning Torah, and Yoav is working on the wars, which is Avodas Habirurim. So which one is the greater contribution to that family that descended from both of them? And the Rebbe also talks about the idea over there. You can look at it also. Should Yoav be doing this? Should he in fact be spending his time fighting wars rather than he himself needs to be spending time learning Torah? So the Rebbe talks about there are two different perspectives that you can say. Basically, is he required to give up from his time now to bring a benefit later, namely that David will be able to learn Torah or not? And that gets into this point, therefore, of whether then what Yoav is doing is just exactly what's expected of him, or whether he's going lefinim meshuras adin. Getting back now to when Yoav killed Avner, let's get into some more detail about what happened over there. So again, to recap, Avner had all the years been Shaul's and then Ishbosheth's as general. Now he says, I'm done with Ishbosheth, I'm going over to David's side. He comes to David, tells him, I'm going to go gather all the other Shvatim and bring them under your rulership. And he goes, he leaves Hebron, which was David's capital all the time, to go do that. Yoav finds out that Avner had been there. He sends a messenger, tricks him into coming back to Hebron, and then he kills him. So now let's get into some details that the Pasuk says of what happened there. The Pasuk says, Vayetze Yoav me'im David. Yoav left David's presence before that, and the Pesukim before that. He's telling David, you shouldn't trust Avner. He's a double agent over here, etc. So Yoav left David. Vayishlach malochem achrei Avner. He sent messengers to catch up with Avner. Vayashivu oisim mi'bur hasira. They brought him back from Bur Hasira, which in the simple sense is the name of a place. The David La Yoda, David didn't know that this was going on. And later on, when Avner was killed, as we talked about yesterday, David was extremely upset and had to do many things to show the public that he had nothing to do with it. So what's this Bur Hasira? So what's this Bur Hasira? Fine, it's the name of a place, but then why would it be important for us to know that Avner was located there at the time when the messengers told him to return? In other words, the idea is basically that Yoav is sending messengers, making it sound as though David wants Avner back. He realized he forgot something to tell Avner something, and therefore you need to come back. David has something else to tell you. Meanwhile, Yoav himself had sent the messengers without David knowing, and now when he has Avner there, then he kills him. So, my Bur Hasira, Omer of Abba Bakana, Bur Visira, Gormalola Avner Shiyahoreg. Because what happened was, why should Avner, a tzaddik, deserve to be killed like this, is a bur and a sira are the two things that caused him to be killed. Namely like this. In Shmuel Aleph, during the time when David is on the run from Shaul, you have two different times when David was close enough to Shaul that he could have actually killed him. And both times he held back because he says, Shaul is the Mashiach Hashem, I have nothing against him, I'm not touching him. The first time was Shaul is hiding out in a cave. And he was going to the bathroom over there, and then David sneaked up and cut off a corner of Shaul's robe. And then afterwards he calls out to Shaul. He says, look how close I was. If I was close enough to cut off a corner of your robe, obviously I was close enough to kill you, and I didn't. So don't think, why do you think I have something against you when you're chasing me all over the place? Now, at the time, Shaul accepted the argument. You know, it's a valid point. I mean, if you were that close and you could have killed me, and you didn't, then obviously it means you're a good guy. However, then, now Shaul's various advisors, and now we're saying, including Avner, was one of them, started talking Shaul out of it. So one suggestion was, who says that David actually got anywhere near you? You caught your clothing on a thorn, and it ripped off, and now David found the piece of cloth over there and is claiming that he was near you. One of the words for thorn in Hebrew is sira. So therefore, so that's the sira of the pasuk over here. So because of that, because Avner was saying lashon hara about David, is one factor that caused him to be killed afterwards. The other explanation is that, so that's one. That's the sira. What's the bur? A couple of prakim later, again, when Shaul is chasing after David, one night they go to sleep over there. They have their army encampment over there. Shaul's sleeping in the middle of the camp, and everybody is dead asleep. And David's men tell him, you know, you have a perfect opportunity over there. You can go into the camp and kill Shaul and nobody will be the wiser. And again, David says, I'm not going to, but he takes one of the men with him and goes and takes two of the things that Shaul had right next to him, his spear and his jug of water. And again, he goes a distance away and he yells out to Avner to wake up and he tells him, Hayitochen, you know, you're supposed to be the king's bodyguard. Hayitochen, you were asleep. I was so close, I could have killed him and I didn't, and so on and so forth. The same thing as before. Now again, what did Avner do this time? He says, I don't know, maybe one of your soldiers gave him these things. How do you know he sneaked up and was that close to you? So therefore the idea would be then that the bur represents that jug of water. A bur is a pit full of water, and therefore that represents the jug. That's according to Rashi. Marsha says it's a little bit of a doichet because the fact is a jug is not a bur. So he brings from the Radak that he says, you know what? Probably what happened was one of your men went and took your jug to the nearby pit of water to refill it, and he left it there by accident, and David found it, and now is claiming that he was somewhere nearby. So therefore, so that's the bur and the sira. And for that, we're saying, for those two times that that Avner was saying Lashon Hara about David and bad mouthing him and pretending him and pretending like he really is out to that he's lying and he really is out to get Shaul. Now we're saying years later that was what made him Chayav Misa B'Dei Shemayim, and that's why Hashem allowed him to get misled by Yoav and ended up being killed. Okay, so the pasuk continues. Vayatir Yoav al Teich Hashar. So Yoav brought him, or like Vayatir literally means like he turned him aside, al Teich Hashar, into the gateway, Ledaber Ite Basheli, to talk with him Basheli. Now the simple meaning of Basheli means unawares. Avner is unaware that Yoav has anything against him, and he's going to talk with him, and then meanwhile, when Avner is unsuspecting, then Yoav will have a chance to kill him. But first, what's this? El Teich Hashar, Amar Rav Yochanan Shedone B'Din Sanhedrin. I mean, that he's going to judge him the way the Sanhedrin judges, because we always find the Sanhedrin would sit by the gates. So therefore, it means, in other words, that he's going to... He's going to bring up his claims about why he holds that he has a legal right now to kill Avner. Amalei says, "My time of Katal to last soil. Why, as we talked about yesterday, why did you kill our soil?" And in previous Perek there, this is in Shmuel Bey's Perek Gimel. In the previous Perek Bey's, there was a short battle, not so short, whatever, it lasted a whole day, but whatever, there was a battle between Ish-Boshes' forces led by Avner and David's forces led by Yoav. And at one point, Asoil, a brother of Yoav, was chasing after Avner and Avner killed him. So why'd you kill Asoil? So he answers, as we talked about yesterday, Asoil roidev hava, because Asoil was pursuing after me, and therefore I'm entitled to kill him, as it talks about later in the Masechta, that you're allowed to kill a roidev. So this is going to be now the same points that are brought up many years later, as we learned yesterday, when Yoav himself is on trial by the Sanhedrin. Now, at this time, Yoav is bringing up these points to Avner himself. So he says, you could have instead saved him from the Aveira of by wounding him in one of his limbs. You didn't have to kill him. And Avner says, I couldn't. I'm being chased. I had no choice. I hit him from behind me and I couldn't aim properly. So Yoav tells him, you were able to hit him directly dafka in the fifth rib, which, as we talked about yesterday, is a very vulnerable spot, and a person can die immediately from a blow there. So you couldn't have aimed for some other organ of his, for some other body part of his, and disabled him rather than killing him. And therefore, Yoav is arguing to Avner, therefore, you did wrongly. You killed a roidif when you would have had the ability to do something less, and therefore, for that, I am the Goyal Adam, and I'm entitled to kill you. As we talked about yesterday, doesn't mean that actually Avner would be Chayav in Mrs. Bastin, not necessarily, but at least it means that Yoav has the ability to be the Goyal Adam for it. So now, when the Pasuk says, L'dabur ite Basheli, so now when the Pasuk continues that Yoav came to talk with him Basheli, and again, the simple meaning of Basheli means unawares. So Omer of Yehuda Omer Av, L'dabur ite al iske sholu, means he's going to talk with him about matters of sholu, which sholu is Meloshin shal na'alachom ha'araglacha, like Hashem tells Moshe about the snare, take off your shoes. So he's going to talk with him about a din in connection with the mitzvah of chalitza. So what happened was, So Rashi teaches out what happened. He asks Avner, they get into a discussion in Torah. So tell me, when it comes to Chalitza, the Yavama has to take off the Yavama's shoe, she has to undo the straps and take off the shoe. What if she is an amputee? What if she's a double amputee and has no hand to do it? So Avner says, in that case, then she can undo it with her teeth. So Avner bends down to demonstrate how that would be done. And then while he's bending down over there, then Yoav pulled out his sword and killed him. That's what Rashi explains, that later on, before David passed away, when he gives his instructions to Shlomo, and in Melachim Aleph Perek Beis, after Vayechi, he tells him that Yoav had blood in the belt on his waist and in the shoes on his feet. Why the belt and the shoe? Because the shoe was how he tricked Avner, and the belt was where he was holding the sword, that was where he had the sword strapped on, which then he pulled out and killed Avner. So Maharal Shah says actually what it was is that it's not just that Abner on so first of all we have to wonder how Abner was tricked at this point if he knows that Yoav is gunning for him. We'll get back to that point in a second. But first, Maharal Shah says that Rashi is saying that Abner on his own volition went and bent down to show how this would be done. Maharal Shah says not exactly. When Abner says she could do it with her teeth, then Yoav still play acting and says, well, show me. And then Abner bent down, and then everything. So Ben Yehoyada says, I mean, look, what was Abner thinking? He just now Yoav had finished telling him that Yochayev, that I'm the Goyal Adam and Yochayev Misa. How did Abner not realize to be careful? So he explains that there was actually a whole discussion over here. He reconstructs a whole discussion now that Yoav has said I'm the Goyal Adam and Yochayev Misa. Then they get into a discussion about when do we say that, exactly how do we define a roidif? The Torah, after all, tells us the din of a roidif in connection with imba machteras yimotzei aganav. If you find a ganav tunneling into the house, then ein loy domin. So does that mean exactly, does that mean only davka if the guy is tunneling into the house? What if he's threatening you in some other way? And that gets into a discussion. When do we say that when the Torah says that if something is done in a certain way or happens in a certain way, means exactly that way and no other, versus when we just say that the Torah is just giving us a typical example. And eventually, Yoav manipulated the conversation into this matter of chalitza, where chalitza, of course, would normally be done with the hands, but does it davka mean that it has to be done that way, or can it be done a different way. So in other words, basically, by getting into this whole discussion, he ends up cause Abner to let down his guard, and therefore now he has the opportunity to kill him.
We're just talking and learning.
He was talking and learning, but with the intention of manipulating the conversation, of skewing the conversation in the direction that he wanted, to the point where he would be able to get Abner in a vulnerable position and kill him.
His Goyal Adam is his brother, and Chalitza is also a brother.
That's true also. Chalitza is also a brother, so maybe there's a connection there.
That's
interesting.
Got to it.
Interesting, could be. Okay. So now the pasuk says, "Vayakeu shama choymesh." Again, he struck him in the fifth rib. Amar Rav Yechon the dofen chamishes. That means in the fifth. Choymesh means the fifth rib. Makom shemar v'kavod tluyin boy, the place where the liver and the gallbladder hang, which is therefore a very vulnerable spot. That was exactly where Abner had hit Asael, and now this is exactly where Yoav hit Abner and killed him. So now, again, when David finds out, he's extremely upset because, like we talked about yesterday, you know, Abner had just come over to his side. But as far as everybody knew all these years, Abner had been on Shaul's side. If now he's killed and it looks on the surface like it was at David's orders, then David has reason to be concerned. People are going to think that that now anybody who wants to come over from Shaul's side, then David is going to be out to get them. And that David doesn't keep his word, etc. So the whole thing could start a whole civil war. So again, like we learned yesterday, David cursed Yoav with many curses. Eventually, we learned they bounced back on Shlomo's descendants. But anyway, so now when it finally comes time for David himself had said a lot of harsh things about Yoav at the time, and now many years later, when Shlomo is actually going to carry things out, and he sends Benayahu ben Yehoyada to kill Yoav, and as we talked about yesterday, Yoav was refusing to leave the Oyel Moed, to leave the Mizbeach. He thought he'll be safe there. He wanted to be judged by the Sanhedrin, as we learned before. Anyway, so Shlomo says to Benayahu, doesn't matter. Kill him. He quotes, "The hate of Hashem is domai al roshay. Hashem will return the guilt of the blood on his head. Asher, in other words, he'll be responsible for his own death. Asher poga b'shnei anoshim tzadikim v'toyvim mimenu. That he attacked two people who were greater tzadikim and were better than him by yargin b'cherem, and he killed them with the sword. So the two people are Avner and Amasa. But why is Shlomo calling them tzadikim v'toyvim mimenu? So toyvim. In what way are they better than him? In Toiv al Torah. So therefore, it means that they knew something, or they applied something in Torah which Yoav did not. Shehem Doshu Achen v'Rakin v'Hu Lo Dorash. Namely, that they knew to darshan the Achen and Rakin in the Torah, like we talked about yesterday, to not follow the king where it conflicts with the Torah, whereas he did not. Namely, in the case of Amasa, we talked about yesterday, that Amasa had gone, was supposed to rally the troops to go fight against Sheva ben Bichri, but he found them learning Torah, so he didn't interrupt them from their learning, and therefore that's why he was late. So he did correctly. He darshin, as the pasuk says, rak chazak ve'ematz, that we learn from that the king's power is not absolute, not where it conflicts with Torah. whereas Yoav did not, which is why, as we learned before, Yoav claimed that Amasa was a murder of Malchus because he had disobeyed David's orders. So we see that Amasa knew how to darshan these kinds of things and applied this kind of drosha in the Torah, whereas Yoav did not. As far as Avner, Rashi explains, this goes back many years earlier. When David had run away to Noiv Irakoyim at one point, and the Kohen Gadol had given him food and a sword, etc. And meanwhile, Doeg Adoimi was there, and he later on mastered on them that they're in cahoots with David, and they're rebelling against Shaul's authority. So Shaul has them all caught, has them all brought to him, and he orders that they should all be executed as Modim Malchus. So he turns to his so he turns to his servants, which includes Avner, his general, and tells him, kill the Kohanim. And Avner refused. The pasuk says, "V'loy ovu nare amelach l'shloach hasyadam." The young men of the king, which includes Avner, did not want to stretch forth their hand against the Kohanim. So then Shaul tells Doeg, "You do it," and Doeg goes and kills them and kills a whole bunch of them. So now that means, so the same thing. Avner knew that what Shaul is ordering is against the Torah. He's saying to kill these people on the claim that they're Modim Malchus, and Avner knew it's not so. So therefore, so he knew to darshan that point that you don't follow the king where it goes against the Torah. Whereas here we're saying in the matter of Amasa and then being late because the soldiers were learning Torah, Yoav did not. Therefore, that makes Avner and Amasa. So Amasa with the case of being late, and Avner with the story with the Kohen Hashem, with the Kohenim of Noiv, so both of them knew that the king's power is not absolute, whereas Yoav did not know that. So therefore, in that sense, they are Tovim, they know how to darshan the Torah, in Tovim la Torah, better than he does. So therefore, Shlomo calls them Tovim relative to Yoav. And what's Tzadikim? Shehem b'peh v'loy osu. Each of them was given an instruction verbally by the king, and they still disobeyed it. Which they were correct, because the king's power does not extend to this case. V'hu b'igeres v'osa, whereas Yoav was given instructions in a letter which he shouldn't have followed, and he still followed. Namely, with the whole story of Uriah. After David has been with Bathsheba, and now Uriah comes back, and now David calls Uriah back from the battle, and he wants him to go home, and et cetera. He'll do a whole cover-up over there. Kitzer Amaisa, Uriah is not playing along. So eventually David sends a secret letter to Yoav saying, when Uriah comes back to the battle, make sure you put him in the front lines in a place that he's going to be killed. And the idea was, this way, hopefully nobody will put two and two together that Uriah was killed because David wants to marry Bathsheba. This way, Uriah himself, even though he's a Moed B'Malchus, won't be openly executed as a Moed B'Malchus. So he'll fall in battle, which is an honorable way for a soldier to die. In any case, though, when David sends those instructions to Yoav, Yoav shouldn't be following them. The fact is, again, it's against Torah. So therefore, and nevertheless, even though it was only a letter and not face to face, nevertheless, Yoav did what was ordered in the letter rather than saying to David, sorry, I can't do that because it's against the Torah. So therefore, in that sense, they were tzaddikim in disobeying the king when it's against the Torah, and he was less of a tzaddik for not doing that. On top of that, by the way, the Medrash also adds that what happened was that when Uriah was killed, everybody is very angry at Yoav. You know, Uriah was one of our best soldiers. How could you be so careless as to put him in the front lines? And then Yoav made things worse by showing them David's letter, which then broke apart the whole cover-up that David was trying to do, and then created a Chilul Hashem and made both Uriah and David look bad and so forth. So later on, when David says to Shlomo, you remember, you also know, I shall also be Yoav ben Tzruya. So as we've said before, Ibn Yaakov mentions that's another point David meant as well, aside from all the things that Yoav has done wrong over the years, killing Amasa, killing Avner, etc. On top of that, there's also what he did to me on a personal level, showing everybody that letter and therefore blowing up the cover grew up with the matter of Uriah. Now, when Yoav killed Amasa, the expression in the pasuk is that so Yoav sees Amasa and he hugs him. How are you? Amasa le'nishma b'cherev asher b'yad Yoav. And the pasuk is Amasa was not careful about the sword that was in Yoav's hands, and therefore and then Yoav had the opportunity to kill Amasa without him realizing. So what does that mean? Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, Shalei Choshtai. Means he didn't even suspect that Yoav has anything against him. Neva with Avner, we're saying before, Avner knew already that Yoav is out to get him because he's a Goyal Adam. Amosa didn't even realize that Yoav has any Yoav has anything against him. We said before, Yoav claimed that Amosa was Murid B'Malchus, but Amosa himself did not even know that Yoav thought of him that way. So when Yoav is hugging him and how are you, then Amosa didn't even realize and he didn't take care to pay attention to the sword. Anyhow, Yoda points out also, if you look in the Pesukim over there, it comes out that that Yoav took the sword in his left hand and killed Amosa with it, and he had it strapped on in an unusual way, so it would easily fall out, and then he could pick it up without anybody knowing, without anybody realizing anything is wrong. Anyway, Ben Yoda points out, you wear tefillin on your left arm. So Amosa had no reason to think that on the very same arm that Yoav is wearing his tefillin shoyad on, he's going to use the very same arm to pick up a sword and kill him. He had no clue even that this was going to happen. He had no reason to suspect that Yoav would do such a thing. So eventually we said that Yoav was in fact executed by Benayo, and the pasuk says that he covered Bevesed Bamidbar. He was buried in his house in the desert. So what does that mean? And in fact, the pasuk says when Maharsha points out, the pasuk says when David gives those last instructions to Shlomo, he says to him, "Vayosim dmei mochama b'shalom," that they were at peace with him. They didn't think there was anything wrong, especially Amasa, and here he killed them as though it was in battle. Okay, so now when it says Vayikover b'beisem amidbo, that Yoav was killed and then he was buried in his house in the desert, otu beisem midbohu, what do you mean? Is Yoav's house a desert? Why are we saying that? So Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, now we should talk about good things about Yoav. So Kimidbar, it means that Yoav's house was like the desert. Ma midbar mufka lakol, just like a desert is hefker for anybody to go there. Af beisa shayoav mufka lakol, the same way Yoav's house was hefker to everybody. All poor people could come anytime they want and get food from him. Dabar acha, another explanation. Hamidbar hazeh, it means also in another way, Yoav's house was like a desert. Ma midbar hazeh menukum migezel v'arayas. A desert is clean of gezel or of arayas. There's no gezel over there because everything's hefker, and there's no arayas. People are traveling through a desert are not going to be in a mood for arayas. Ach beisesho Yoav menukum migezel v'arayas, the same way Yoav's house was clean of such things. And the point is, in other words, that usually soldiers are guilty of gezel and arayas throughout all the years. And nevertheless though, Yoav was not. His house was clean of such things. Maharsha explains the flow of it as follows. We're saying he was buried by Beis Bamidbar. Now, if he was killed by Beis Din, then we learned earlier in the parak, he wouldn't have been buried yet among his ancestors. He would have been buried in those temporary grave sites that the Beis Din had for Aruge Beis Din, and only later would he be reburied at home. Whereas here we're saying, to begin with, he was buried at home. So now the vote is that fine, Shlomo says, fine, go ahead and kill Yoav, but don't treat him like Haruge Beis Din, who has to be buried in these temporary graves. Rather, go right away and bury him the Kivur Avosav. Why is he zoicha to that? Because he had the schus, because his house was always a place of tzedakah, and it was open always to the Aniyim, and there was no gezel on Arayas there, unlike most soldiers and most generals who are usually guilty of taking such things. Maharsha points out the same way, for example, we have the Jewish soldiers who went to war against Midian. Not one of them took anything that he wasn't supposed to, so Yoav was the same way. And of course, yeah. Okay, so one more thing the Gemara says about Yoav. When David captured the city of Yerushalayim, so the Pasuk describes that David rebuilt parts of the city, the Yoav Yechaya es Shara'ir. Yoav made alive the rest of the city. So in the simple sense, it means, in other words, most of the city was destroyed, parts of it anyway, so Yoav rebuilt parts of it. But what does it mean? Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, afilu munini v'tzachanta, even little fish, munini and tzachanta are both kinds of little fish. Toyim, poris lahu, whenever he tasted some, he would always spread it out and make it available for the poor people. So he wouldn't just make sure that the poor people have the basics, bread and water, he would give them even the delicacies, like the little fish, that he would have and make sure that it's available to them. Munini would mean fish. Maharsha brings that oruch. The oruch says that munini means fish juice. So Yoav Yechaya Shara'ir, even the things that are sha'or, that are shirayim, that are less important, nevertheless he would make people alive and give them plenty of it. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gu'ola, Yud Tammuz. So we're talking about the Aleph that goes into Gu'ola to make Gu'ola. So far we talked about that it means Meloshen Aluf and Meloshen Aleph Ha'Fahma. So now the Rebbe explains the third thing. Aleph is the same letters as Pella. So La'osid Lovay, the Niflois, the wondrous things in Torah, will be revealed, the Gilut Pnimius HaTorah, which is in itself, is Muflais, is wondrous, and completely separated from our world. So this is the revelation of Mohus of Atzmos Yisvarech. That will be in the times of Geula, as contrasted with Geula.
Okay.
Continuing with halachas of tzitzis, we're talking about the time of tzitzis. So now we were talking about daytime clothing, nighttime clothing. So blankets and pillows, sometimes a person sleeps during the day, but they're made for the nighttime, therefore they're called ksus laila, and therefore they would be potter from tzitzis. Now what about the opinion that said, that we learned earlier, that they're chayev and tzitzis if you wear them by day? So then, according to that way of looking at it, you would have to put tzitzis on such things, because after all, a person sometimes uses blankets and pillows during the daytime. Nevertheless, the most widespread minhag is not to, even if they're made out of wool or linen, because yesh omrim that it's only things that a person wear, that a person puts on in a way of wearing, as opposed to a blanket you spread over yourself and a pillow you put your head on, then therefore there would be, so that's another reason to say that they're potter from tzitzis. Nevertheless, yesh chokin, so therefore if they're made of wool, then wound off one corner and then it's potter from tzitzis, the divrei hakol. Of course, if the blankets are made out of other things, as blankets usually nowadays are, then you don't have a problem in the first place.
Yeah.
For now.